I mean, yeah, I mentioned the running game, but the part I didn't mention is that it's basically imaginary. Like, the running game might as well be the Tooth Fairy or Bigfoot. It doesn't exist.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Falcoholic Podcast, the official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am DW, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, the Joom, Petter of Dogs, first of her name, the Daenerys Targaryen of Falcons Twitter, the Quick Draw McGraw of Facebook Messenger, the Trash Talker Supreme, the one and only Touchdown Balls, she will not be bossed, Gina Matt Online Thomas. Gina, how are you doing?
I keep forgetting that you put the touchdown balls line into my nickname, and it kills me every single time. I'm doing great,
never
David.
Letting
Thank
you go.
you. How are you?
I'm fantastic. And touchdown balls is bar none my favorite nickname now. So
I earned
sorry
that one.
Sorry about that. You certainly did. Joining us is the managing editor from one of the SB Nation sites similar to the Falcoholic that covers the Baltimore Ravens, the upcoming opponent for the Falcons this weekend. The managing editor is none other than Kyle Barber. Kyle, thanks for joining us, man.
I'm a little bit salty. I don't get any kind of intro like Gina gets. My goodness. I threw it on mute. I don't know if you guys saw that. I threw it on mute because I couldn't handle it. I didn't want to jump the gun and I didn't want to overdo the laughing. Oh my goodness.
Holy cow. She has a nickname that is legendary and well-known amongst the Falcons Twitter circle at this point. So.
Yes, yes.
That was incredible. That was great. But yeah, I'm thrilled to be on the podcast.
We're very glad to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers.
So before we jump into the matchup of the Falcons going up against the Ravens this weekend, Kyle, I thought it would be interesting for our readers because of there's a little bit of a Georgia connection to this story with the quarterback situation in Baltimore. Obviously, Falcons fans are more than aware of Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan have been essentially tied to the hip since both were drafted in 2008. They have been compared by fans ad nauseum over the past decade. But now we've got a little bit of a new story in Baltimore. And that is the drafting and the recent playing time for Lamar Jackson, who went to high school in Georgia. Many Georgia fans who watch high school football here were extremely familiar with Lamar Jackson. He is an incredibly talented, incredibly athletic player that made highlights even as a high school player. He was you could see him on the news almost on a weekly basis during high school football season. He was that much of a standout. And now he has gotten his first start, which was a win last week for the Ravens. So, Kyle, I'll turn it over to you. What is the story with Jackson? Are Flacco's days numbered as a Raven? Do you think we'll see Joe Flacco start again in 2018? What is your take on this situation?
Oh boy, so much there. But first, you know, he's 2-0 as a starter now with the Ravens. He's won two games, both of them, one against the Cincinnati Bengals. It was a comeback victory. The Bengals have had the Baltimore Ravens number for quite a few years now, specifically Joe Flacco, especially when they're on the road to Cincinnati. Flacco's struggled at Paul Brown Stadium. It's been rough. And the Bengals have had their numbers. So that was a huge win, comeback victory. He broke franchise record for most rushing yards by a quarterback. He broke the NFL record for the Super Bowl era of most rushing attempts. He had 27. Wow. Shout out to Tim Tebow having the record previous to him, you know, the glorious Tim Tebow. Great names to be put up right beside. It's like, oh, whose number did he beat? Oh, Tebow's. Well, this isn't starting out as well as I was happy. You know, I was hoping, I was like, he just broke Vic's record or he broke, you know, Culpepper's somebody. But no, it was old Tebow.
Tebow. So
that was great. But getting back into it, Lamar Jackson's incredibly talented. Everybody knew it going in there. He had the most upside of any of the rookie quarterbacks, I like to think, that at least people noticed of him. And the Ravens had the option to groom him into a quarterback maybe this year. Maybe he started this year. Maybe if Joe took him on a playoff run, he wouldn't play until 2020 maybe. Joe Flacco might stay. But it all sat around on Joe Flacco's contract and the numbers. And mm-hmm. he's due $28.75 million next year. Wow. Nearly $30 million Joe is owed next year. I believe they saved $20 million on the cap if they cut him instead. It might be the full 28. I can't quite remember. He's just been loaded up on so much money, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, unfortunately. But mercy, he got that big contract, then he got a contract extension. So that's been the big part of it. But to talk about Lamar, he's revolutionized the offense. They went from a struggling rushing game where they weren't getting anything. Flacco was throwing 50 times a game. Alex Collins has been struggling in the trenches. The run game hasn't done well. And, you know, fantasy owners specifically were furious after he had such an incredible year one, and they were expecting that again. So I caught a lot of heat on social media for that specifically. But he's revolutionized that run game, you know. He put over 100 yards in his first game. Gus Edwards put over 100 yards in his first game. So they both went over 100 yards against Bengals. Excuse me, the next week, Gus Edwards notched another 100-yard game. All of a sudden, they're capable of getting yards on the ground, which they were just incapable of doing with Flacco on the field. So this has been the biggest change and revolution to the Ravens offense, and that's what Lamar brings. He can throw it. He is capable of throwing it. I know everybody else complains whether he can or whether he can't, but when he makes mistakes, it's okay because he's a rookie, and we've seen Joe make the same mistakes that Lamar will make, but he's been in the league for 10, 11 years now, and that's where the fans have started to really turn into Lamar fans and get encompassed in the debate and start transitioning to the Lamar Jackson side of things. Because when Flacco makes these boneheaded plays, when he throws those goal line interceptions like it occurred against the Browns, when he threw it to Nick Boyle forcing a pass, all of a sudden, you know, it's okay when Lamar would do that. It's growing pains. Rookies learn through their mistakes, but Joe's been in the league for a decade, and you just can't keep watching it anymore. Fans can't keep watching it. So that's been the biggest transition.
So do you feel like there is a consensus amongst fans that they're ready for Lamar Jackson's era to begin?
I would agree with that. Yes, it's about 70-30, 75-25, you know, but everybody still respects Joe. And it's this whole thing of you can like both of them. Everybody thinks that you can only like one or the other. And I think both are very well, you know, beloved already. Everybody's so excited for the Lamar Jackson era. Some people don't want to let Joe Flacco go quite yet because he won them a Super Bowl. He went to the playoffs 5 straight years when he was starting. But in the end, everybody does seem to go for Lamar Jackson starting now as opposed to next year.
Yeah. So I just before, and Gina, I've got to do this because I know how our readers are and our listeners are. They will light me up like a Christmas tree in Times Square if I don't clarify this. I was mistaken. I thought Jackson went to high school in Georgia. I have him crossed up with someone else. He actually went to high school in Florida. So let me be clear. I got my information wrong. That was completely off base with me. The only tie, I guess, we have with Lamar Jackson is he was coached by Bobby Petrino in college, which we have that tie with Petrino that we don't want to talk about.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, man, this is real rough. Like, you had to backtrack the first part, and then you link him to Bobby.
Bobby Petrino.
You're getting lit up on social media either way now, friend. And I didn't call it out.
My life.
Between this and I didn't call it out because about- I –
Go ahead, Gina. Go ahead.
Between this and having to talk about how this Falcons offensive line will hold up against this Ravens defensive front, I think that we're all, well, at least two of us will be singing sad Sarah McLachlan songs by the end of this podcast.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. But I was going to call you out on it, but I was like, man, he's got it right in front of him probably. I don't want to say it because I thought he was in Florida, but I wasn't certain. And so I was like, I don't want to get burned on the first time I hop on this podcast called the host incorrectly. So, all right.
It's, I just need, you know what the fix is here? It's a very simple one. I need alcohol. That's it.
There you go.
So I'm going to get a drink after this and figure out how the hell to edit all this.
We're leaving it all in. We're leaving it all in.
You know, that's always my solution. I'd look at him like, I'm going to edit this. And like, we'll just publish it as is. So on that note, let's make the completely awkward and not at all professional transition to talk about the Falcons offense going up against this Ravens defense. So Gina, I'm going to start with you first on this one. We've seen the numbers. Matt Ryan in the past month has been hit by more than any QB in the league. The Falcons offensive line has been
terrible.
Quite bad. What do the Falcons have to do offensively if they're going to get back on track in this game? What are some of the key things that we need to see change against the Ravens?
Like, I don't want to be Debbie Downer over here, but I don't know that there's any getting back on track for this team this year. It would be one thing if the offense were still performing at such a high level like they were for most of the season. I mean, Matt Ryan's been generally fantastic, had a down week last week, but, you know, a lot of that was pressure and then also mistakes from, you know, turnovers in the red zone will kill you every time. But, you know, they're making another change along the offensive line, I believe, and bringing in the guy whose name is completely escaping me. I'm sorry, it's been a very long day at SB Nation. What's his name?
Zane Beadle.
Zane Beadle.
Zane Beadle.
Zane Beadle. He sounds like a cartoon character, and I think that that's why I have a hard time remembering his name. But yeah, so I think that Beatles is going to get the start in place of Ben Garland. And that's fine because I think that, you know, Garland's definitely had some lapses and it puts a lot of strain then on the tackle and on the center to try to compensate for that. And against a defensive front like the Ravens, that's, you know, dangerous. But when you switch in anybody else on the offensive line, it creates more instability because it takes a while to develop that chemistry and be able to play in concert with each other the way that the line needs to. And so what they're gonna have to do is stop sucking. And are they able to do that? I have my doubts. So that's my very professional analysis. I think that, you know, I understand the want to make a change at guard, at either of the guard positions really, but I also think that it's just gonna be, it's gonna create more instability in the short term, and this is a really difficult defense to have an unstable line against.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be cool if they could get the run game going, but they're not going to do that against this unit.
No. I don't know they'll do much against this unit, but
yeah.
Kyle, as I was researching an article and looking at who plays in this front seven for Baltimore, what was interesting to me, and maybe my perception's wrong, and I'm looking for some feedback from you here. It doesn't seem like there is necessarily one dominant player from a, you know, like someone who is going to be an all pro, you know, someone that's like a JJ Watt or an Aaron Donald that, you know, can just be a wrecker by themselves. But what I saw was just a good level of quality sort of across the board. There just didn't seem to be a drop off. So you've got several pass rushers that all are contributing. And so there's not a guy with like 14 sacks, but there's a bunch of guys that have 4, 5, 6 sacks each. So what is the story with this Ravens defensive front? What should Falcons fans be looking out for from this front seven?
Well, according to Brandon Williams' contract, they think he's an Aaron Donald. Unfortunately, he is not. I'm going to throw that out there. I love big Brandon Williams. He was my first NFL interview, but his contract is a little bit big for only being a run stopper. But things to watch out for, or things to watch for specifically, or who on the Ravens front, it's got to be Michael Pierce. He is the defensive tackle beside Brandon Williams. He is the pass rusher. He's the three tech that can get to the quarterback and create and disrupt and force interior pressure along in the center and guard roles for the Falcons offensive line. He's really a unique player. He was an undrafted free agent, and he created a defensive touchdown in the third preseason game last year against your foe, the New Orleans Saints. So shout out Michael Pierce for that. And he's quite the talent. He's a really big player, and that'll be the big guy along the interior. Of course, we got to talk about Terrell Suggs. You know, that man is a living legend. Yeah, he's a living legend. He's incredible. He just scored his, I believe, third defensive touchdown in his career after Matt Judon got a forced fumble on Derek Carr, bounced up into his arms, and he ran it in like Ed Reed. He actually almost tried to pitch it. He thought about it. He was talking about it in the post-game interview, and he's like, I was going to pitch it. He's like, I was totally going to pitch it, but he decided against it and scored instead. Matt Judon's really coming along. He had a really slow start to the season. I was expecting him to get a double-digit sack lead. He's grown in every single year thus far. I believe he went from 2 sacks to 4 to 8, and I believe he just got to 6 now after having a sack trick on 3 straight plays. He had 3 sacks. It was quite a wonder to watch. But you're really right. This team is not a star talent heavy squad. They really have never been after Ray and Ed left, after Anquan Boldin was traded. You know, after that Super Bowl, they purged all this incredible talent and picked up a bunch of very talented players, but nobody star talented. You know, Mosley was drafted and he was all pro level a few years ago. I think he's regressed a bit. Eric Weddle is past his prime, but still, of course, a very talented player. Tony Jefferson's a good player. Jimmy Smith's a good player. It's all the sum of their parts. And that's actually a line that Brett Coleman of SB Nation, the film review guy for Battle Red Blog, he did a feature on them when they were playing against the Saints. And he said, this team isn't incredibly star talent driven. They're just a sum of all their parts are very good. And that's what makes them a good team.
Yeah, and that seemed to jump out in the analysis I saw. So, Gina, as I look at this secondary for the Ravens, they've got a familiar name, been in the league a while, Jimmy Smith, Eric Weddle, who I think is still one of the top safeties in the league, Tony Jefferson, Marlon Humphrey, I believe, is one of the other corners. Do you think the Falcons, with the receiving trio of Jones, Sanu, and the rookie Calvin Ridley, is this a matchup that they have to win in order to score? You already mentioned the running game, but if the Falcons are going to score, do you feel like beating guys like Weddle, beating guys like Smith, that our receivers are going to have big games?
I mean, yeah, I mentioned the running game, but the part I didn't mention is that it's basically imaginary. Like, the running game might as well be the Tooth Fairy or Bigfoot. It doesn't exist. So, yeah, the receivers are going to have to do something. I mean, thank goodness they have talent like Julio Jones, who is leading the league in receiving yards, even though he doesn't have very many touchdowns, and Calvin Ridley, who does have a lot of touchdowns, even though he is prone to dropping the ball occasionally. And Sanu is a very good possession receiver. So, you know, I'd like to see them get Ito Smith and especially Tevin Coleman more involved in the passing game. So, you know, they're actually earning their paychecks out there because Lord knows they're not doing anything on the ground behind this line. But yeah, I mean, it is, I think, a big opportunity for the Falcons receivers because those guys have all been really good players throughout their careers. Like Eric Weddle is a guy in his prime I love to watch. But I do think that there are some matchups, especially with talent like Ridley and Julio, especially, that they can really take advantage of there.
Yeah, it's definitely a matchup. I think that you know, it's no knock on the Ravens. I think the Falcons just have the skill positions that overwhelm most defensive secondaries. There's very few that keep up on a consistent basis. But as you noted, if the Falcons' run game is what it is, they've got to win through the air. Which means that you've got to watch out for guys like Weddle and Smith and hope that they don't have their best games, because if they do, it could be a very, very long day for the Falcons. So let's flip the script, and I want to talk now about this Ravens offense, which, as we mentioned earlier, is going to look a lot different with Lamar Jackson behind center as opposed to Joe Flacco going up against this Falcons semblance of a defense. So, Gina, I'm going to start here with you because the reports are that Deion Jones is getting very close. So what is your take? Are we going to see him on the field on Sunday? And if we do, how much of a difference do you think he's going to make for this defense, which has been just god-awful this season?
For the first time, I really feel confident that Deion will play this week. And the reason for that is that Marquand Manuel told us yesterday that for the first time since Deion was activated from IR, he was running with the first team again and then also calling the defensive plays and the huddle. And so that's, I think, the kind of leadership on the field that they've been missing. They've had to hand that over to like Foyer and other people, and those guys have done their best, but it's a big responsibility being the quarterback of the defense. So having Deion and that experience, like Manuel said yesterday, he said, if my mic goes out in the middle of calling what I want the coverage to be, Deion knows what I'm going to say. So he can make it happen. Those other guys don't. They don't have the experience with Marquand and what he does to be able to effectively manage that. And so I do think that it will make a difference, but, you know, you still have all these other backup guys in for all the other guys on IR. Derek Shelby just went on IR too. Not that he's been able to contribute much this year, but he does contribute quite a bit in terms of, you know, leadership on the field and on the sidelines. So I know that that's a difficult thing for this squad. Excuse me. And so, yeah, I think that it will make a difference. Will it be a big enough difference? That's tough to say. I don't think so. I don't think that what we've seen from this defense should give anybody any confidence that that's the case. And then the other thing is, and I mean, this is just the reality, it's really difficult for this defense to prepare for this game because we don't know if Flacco will play at all. Like, I do expect that Jackson will start, but if Flacco can come in for some plays, it does throw things totally off because they have very different playing styles. So it's different than preparing for like Matt Ryan and Matt Schaub in case Schaub has to play, because that's only happening in an emergency and Matt Schaub is like 80 years old. Like, what's he going to do really? But Lamar Jackson,
85, close enough.
Yes. Special talent. He's such a special talent. He has such a varied skill set. And then, you know, Flacco is and has been a good quarterback for the most part over his career. And so I think that it makes it really difficult for this team to prepare. And when you're dealing with guys who are backups primarily and who are less experienced, that's a much tougher situation for them, especially. So I, you know, in case you can't tell, all of my optimism was crushed by the Falcons in the 2016 season after the Super Bowl. And I definitely am not recovering this season. So.
Oh, I definitely need a drink.
Yeah. Sorry.
Can I interject just for a moment?
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
I gotta steal a question real quick. How long has Gina been just on here roasting the Falcons now? How many weeks in a row?
How many years in a row?
Yeah,
I mean, since the season started, like, as soon as all the injuries occurred in week one, I assume it's just been downhill. Because I remember reading Gina's Twitter feed when that occurred. You know, I was watching week one, and I had the Falcons picked heavy favorite. I was like, man, this team's healthy. They look great. I know what that offense is capable of. Their defense is really talented. I know this. And then 2-3 injuries later, whatever it may be, I went, oh, this is great. This is why it's going to be an Eagles win. This is fantastic. It's turning out to be just like the NFC Championships. This sucks.
Yeah, so. we went from sunshine to the depths of darkness as quick as like a roller coaster ride. So
yeah, I would say that
every
Keanu
question
Neal,
to Gina has been just roasting.
losing Keanu Neal and Deion Jones after the first game of the season really did me in, I think.
Yeah. And and honestly, there was a stretch too where we had lost Grady Jarrett, we had lost Tat McKinley for short periods of time, and we didn't know how long those injuries were going to be, and it just felt like just a repeated kick in the nuts, just over and over and over, and yeah, the darkness settled in, and we haven't come up for air, so we're embracing it, we're enjoying the warmth of the darkness that has overcome Falcons Twitter, and. It is what my cold, dead heart lives off of now. So I'm going to turn one more question for you before we go to our player to watch out for. Kyle, and that is this Ravens offense. You mentioned it earlier with Lamar Jackson and the running game coming alive. What are some of the other things that this offense excels at? What's the quality of this offensive line? What are some of the receiving weapons that fans should be on the lookout for?
Things of note for the Ravens offense include, obviously, Lamar Jackson. You know, he is capable of being both a passer and a runner, and he makes a lot of smart decisions. It's pretty impressive to watch, because that was one of the biggest knocks on him, is he capable of handling an NFL offense? You know, he does struggle with some play calling, but he makes a lot of great decisions. When he tucks the ball, he's still looking, his eyes are still forward, and that's how they were capable of beating Cincinnati, was instead of him tucking it and getting the 3 or 4 yards because the spy had him locked down, he looked back up, found John Brown moving around, and was capable of, you know, completing a pass, getting a first down, and doing whatever was necessary to really win. So he's, of course, going to be the obvious person to point to. As far as the offensive line goes, both Ronnie Stanley's playing well, and Orlando Brown Jr., who was a big name coming out of this year's draft, had that horrible combine, dropped him to the third round. He was expected to go to the Ravens in the first, and then they ended up picking him in the third because it was such a bad combine. But
wow,
the football tape was real. It was, he didn't want to be there, or something occurred to where he was not performing to expectation. He looked lazy, looked slow, and it dropped him 2 rounds. But he's producing great in the role where James Hurst is has a back injury. He hasn't played for several weeks now. So that's been the player to point to, has been Orlando Brown Jr. and Ronnie Stanley as the tackles there. As far as the weapons go, Gus Edwards Jr. is the first player, I believe, to have back-to-back 100-yard games since Rice did it quite a few seasons ago, obviously, which is pretty big. You know, the Ravens' run game has always been something that they've been known for, but they really haven't done it all too well or successfully in seasons past. Weapons. Michael Crabtree, of course, is quite the talent. John Brown has done well. He's had a sluggish November, but as far as, you know, the earlier in the season, he was dynamic and scoring touchdowns, and deep passes were getting his way. Willie Snead has been a great chain mover for the Ravens. I believe the Falcons fans are all too familiar with Willie Snead and what he's capable of. And he's doing just the same thing with the Ravens as he was doing years past with the Saints. It's been really good to be able to watch him and see three NFL capable receivers on the Ravens roster for the first time in what feels like years, since 2012 is really what it's felt like, or when Steve Smith was with the Ravens and he was producing and they had you know, one or two other players with him. But these are all three NFL starting receivers now on the roster, and it's boosted the Ravens offense and in their play tremendously, you know. And against the Bengals, they actually were throwing a fit on the sidelines. And while some people, you know, criticize and call that being a diva, they were wanting the football. You know, Lamar had ran for over 20 attempts, and the passes weren't going their way. He threw a total of 19 passes, rushed for 27 attempts, and they were getting upset because they knew they could beat the players in front of them, but they weren't given the opportunities, and so that's what they changed up against the Raiders in the next week. So they got some weapons.
All right. It's going to be a lot to watch out for. So with that, our final segment before we get into our game predictions, a little thing we like to do where we call out one player from either team that we think fans need to watch out for on Sunday that could have a big difference on the outcome of this game. So Gina, I'm going to start with you. Who's the one player that fans need to watch out for on Sunday?
Well, let's see. I mean, it's hard for me to pick one player just because I think what I want to focus on is the offensive line. I mean, I do think that Atlanta's ability to succeed in this one is going to depend on keeping Matt Ryan upright and, you know, not looking like complete idiots when they try to run the ball. And so, again, like, I don't have a great deal of optimism about that, but I do think that if the offensive line could just play adequate football, that it would go a lot more smoothly for Atlanta. So I'm going to cheat and pick 5 players, and it's those 5.
Awesome. Kyle, who's the one player that you think fans need to watch out for on Sunday.
All right. Well, if Gina's going to pick five, I get to pick two. Like, that's how I'm going to take this.
That's fine.
You said one player, and then she's like, you know what? I'm going to go five times that. So
but Kyle,
I'm going to jump on two.
What you got to understand is that I can't be bossed. I can't be bossed. Don't boss me. I can't be bossed. I'm unbossable.
Fair enough.
But you can also be unbossable.
I'm going to go with one offense, one defense. I feel that's perfect. Respectable and reasonable on like five picks.
We can roll with that.
All right. On offense, I'm going to go with Gus Edwards. He was an undrafted free agent this year. He's a rookie. And I remember watching him in training camp. And he looked like the third best tailback on the roster. Alex Collins looked incredible. And he came in slim. He came in quick. And his agility was great in training camp. I went, this guy's going to go for 10, you know, 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. But the run game at that point was not successful. And he didn't have Joe Flacco beside him. You know, he didn't have Lamar Jackson drawing attention away. So Gus Edwards was that guy that he's a big player. He runs north-south. And he still has some elusiveness to him in his game. And it's made him really dynamic and exciting to watch, especially when he's playing next to Lamar Jackson. So that's been my focus on the offense. Watch for him. If the run defense of the Falcons is not up to par, he will probably get his third straight game of 100 yards rushing, and that's something Ravens fans would look forward to. On the defensive side of the ball, I mentioned him earlier. I believe Michael Pierce is going to have a big game. You talked about the struggles of the Falcons offensive line, the five players that Gina picked. I think Michael Pierce will be the guy to perform well if they're struggling, or he can make them struggle, because he's got some really good pass rush moves for being such a big player on the Ravens. He's incredibly powerful. I remember his first year, the broadcasters were showing just how strong he is. He's one of the strongest on the team, if not the strongest. He had like a 700-pound squat video going around and circulating. So he is a titan up front. And right beside Brandon Williams, who is one of the best run-stopping defensive tackles in the league, I think that's going to be the big man to watch on defense, if not Marlon Humphrey, just because of his talent at cornerback. And when Jimmy Smith's getting all the attention, it's been Marlon Humphrey who's producing quite well.
All right. For me, I am going to go with Domonte Kazee. I think if the Falcons defense is going to have any success on Sunday, they're going to hope for either forcing a turnover, or they're going to need their safeties to come in and help with keeping an eye on Jackson and helping to slow down the run. And I think that's going to start with KZ, who leads the league in interceptions. He has been a revelation this year for the Falcons after losing Ricardo Allen to injury. And I think he is a guy that is going to be absolutely critical if the Falcons are going to have any chance in this game. He is going to be the one to watch out for the Falcons. So I do want to thank Kyle for joining us. Kyle, I do have to tell you, because, again, our listeners will not forgive me if I don't bring this up, but Willie Snead, all you have to do is Google Willie Snead, Keanu Neal, to see why Willie Snead may not be looking forward to coming back to Georgia anytime soon. His soul is somewhere still in the old Georgia Dome, which has been buried. So I'm pretty sure I was there at the game when Willie Snead was murdered by Keanu Neal.
Is it a bigger hit than the infamous Cam Chancellor Vernon Davis, you know, tackle?
Is it on par?
It's
shocking that Willie Snead survived it.
Yes.
I mean, he laid him out. You could feel that hit.
And this is coming from Gina, who's done nothing but roast the Falcons for multiple years. Yes. So that is saying something. All right, Gina, I believe you.
Yeah, you'll have to look it up, because it's the stuff of legend amongst Falcons fans, with the way Keanu Neal's been known for big hits, but that was one where and I was actually in the stadium when the hit happened. It was so loud and so audible, the entire stadium went silent, because everyone literally thought that someone had been killed.
This was the murder in the most recent NFL era. That'd have been something. Oh, mercy. Yeah.
So if you love big hits, you've got to check that one out.
I don't know if Ravens fans are big fans of big hits or defense. I don't know, man. I don't know if they want to watch that or anything. You know, we don't have a history of it.
Not
I'll
at all.
See if anybody's interested, I guess.
not like Ed Reed or anything. All right, so Kyle, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you and what you've got going on these days?
Of course, perfect. Of course, you can find all of my work and my wonderful staff's work at BaltimoreBeatdown.com. We have a Twitter handle of @BMoreBeatdown. We're on Instagram, Baltimore Beatdown. You can find my work specifically at @BB_KylePBarber. And tune in. You get to read all about the Lamar Jackson, Joe Flacco debate. We have some wonderful film articles. We have a podcast of our own. It's the Baltimore Beatdown podcast, or the Take It to the Bank, as we have it titled. It's got some got a great host and co-host, Logan Levy, Vasilis Lerikos. You know, got a great staff, and they produce some great quality content on par with you guys. Definitely check all that stuff out.
Awesome. Gina, remind our listeners where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter @GinaThomas, where I am probably roasting the Falcons or posting pictures of my dog. Those are really my primary objectives on the internet. You can also find my work at thefalcoholic.com. I am actually going to be writing a little bit more. I've got some things that I'm probably going to write over the next few days about, you know, things that were said in media availability this week and that sort of thing. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah, you can also see me on Fox 5 on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. on a show called Thursday Night Kickoff. So we're recording this right before it airs. Typically, we're recording it during, so I'll actually get to watch myself on TV tonight.
Woohoo! Yep. Woo. As for me, guys, as always, you can find me on Twitter @FalcoholicDW. My article is @TheFalcoholic.com. And of course, every week here on the Falcoholic podcast. So for Gina, Matt Online Thomas, and for Kyle Barber of Baltimore Beatdown, this is David Walker, DW, thanking you guys for tuning in, and we will talk with you next week.
Hey, everybody. It's Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge. I host a podcast every week called The Vergecast with my friends Paul Miller and Dieter Bone. We've got a rotating cast of characters from our entire site, which is about technology, how it impacts culture, and how that is all a big cycle that causes us to have a wide variety of feelings that you can listen to every Friday. We've done over 300 episodes in the 6 years since The Verge has been around, but you only need to listen to one, the latest one, to get caught up on everything in tech news. Vergecast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Check it out.